Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show that shares insights into how you can build your business once, with hosts Jerry Lowry and Jennifer Navarrete. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Jennifer Navarrete, and with me is Sherry Lowry, who over the course of a month has been sharing her 20-plus years of knowledge on what it takes to build your business once. Now, Sherry, it seems like each and every show gets a deeper and deeper dive and allows us as business owners and entrepreneurs to have a better understanding of what this Build Your Business Once title means.
Yes. So I hope we brought our parachutes because we are going to dive today. And I've really, really enjoyed this, and I'm trying to keep it from becoming too complex. When I dive into how this all unfolded for me, it actually, you know, was over a series of the initial years, not just 30 days in a month. So there's some understanding of why we may need to rescue a few people. Today, I want to talk about how we have some life-saving kind of rescuing capabilities and skills to tap in out there. Every industry has core competencies of some kind, and if you can figure out what your particular industry or your niche in your industry requires, what capabilities and competencies and expertises you need to help you soar, those can also serve you as your rescue net in times of need. So it's really important to know what yours are. I was incredibly fortunate that I was able to help develop and name and identify the 11 core competencies of my particular industry. And it's executive and business coaching. And at the time that this was created, mainly when people said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I'm a coach," they would naturally ask, "What sport?" Because that was back in the mid-90s. Sports were big on the scene. The field that I eventually became a part of did not yet exist, but it was beginning to emerge. And we had some clues and guidelines as to what we did not want to be, because a number of us, probably 40% of us originally, came out of the mental health and psychology and other kind of helping professions. And so we knew what we were wanting to move more away from, but to bring with us some of the best of those industries as essentially a new part of a kind of a helping, you know, underwriting, helping in industry was emerging. So, Jennifer, I know you also created your own way in advance because you are an early adopter. And when you began podcasting, for example, that was a brand new word on the scene, e-podcast.
Actually, it's something that didn't really exist in a business platform. It was really just a bunch of us techie, geeky folks getting together, playing with the shiny new object, and really learning and growing it and building what is now an industry just by our uses, what works, what doesn't work, you know, how could we break it, how could we create things that no one had even thought of. And there was a whole, you know, range of folks that were doing this, and I was tapped right into that because I am, as you said, an early adopter. I do see things and trends, and I get excited by things. Not everything always pans out, but in this case, it most certainly did. And when you're in that early adopter stage where there isn't necessarily an industry and there isn't a governing body or there isn't this consensus of what it is, it's a lot like the Wild West, and it can be very liberating and very freeing. But I think the nice thing was that we were all trying to do no harm, and we were trying to use this in a great and positive way.
Right, and I think you were bringing a whole new set of tools and abilities into marketing and into what event, you know, what used to be called sales, possibly because they were part of communication. But you were bringing a whole new intention and consequently level of quality to that too, of experience, you know, for the consumers. So, and I got to watch a little bit of that emergence, and I still have really vivid recall of awe with how you were going about it. Well, how it happened for me, and I want to credit a couple of people for the inspiration here, because I didn't see this. You know, when you're too close to something, sometimes you can't see it. And I have two particular friends, Travis Twomey and James Flattery, F-L-A-H-E-R-T-Y, who were the inspiration for what we're going to talk about more in detail today. And when we began to kind of collectively at different points in territory and location, but around the same time frame, we began to understand in more detail why people come into my particular industry. And why do people leave what they're doing successfully and want to help create a whole new field and a whole new body of study? And now we actually have PhD dissertations on this topic and other things that have been researched and grounded. At the time, we were making it up, but we were working, like you said, from a high intention, a good purpose, and we all had a lot of educational background, and we also had a lot of business background and experience in doing what we were trying to document. And here's what I think is important for every listener to know about their particular business and their particular industry. What brought them into it? What keeps them in it, and what is it that they tap into every single day that they are making use of their skill sets in a particular in particular ways with clients? The way it turned out for us, and I'm hoping that this can provide kind of an overarching model for people. We had to figure out what it was we actually came into the industry to be and to do ourselves. And that led us to the direct correlative of why do clients come in and show up for the services that we're offering. And it turned out that it could be categorized for us in alphabetically by alphabet. There were three C's that I'm going to tell you about and one mighty S. So what we had in common happened to start with C. And every coach we knew, and by that time I know personally around 6,000 coaches well enough to know where they are, what they kind of specialize in, and a tiny bit about their background. And I've helped train about 3,700 of those. So here's what we've discovered. And the other two of us I referenced earlier as part of my inspiration also trained coaches, and they had both come out of totally different careers before that. We become coaches to connect, to communicate, and to contribute. Those were the three core elements. So if we were going to be a healthy connection and connector for our clients, and if we were going to communicate at the proper level, meaning appropriate, as well as with influence, as well as helpfulness, and if we were going to be making a contribution and being a contribution and being contributed to, there were certain competencies that we realized we were going to be practicing. We could group those into four categories. Category A was setting the foundation, and that had to do with meeting ethical and professional standards. We came out of industries, each of us came out of industries that had ethical and professional standards, but theirs were mostly thou shalt not kind of standards and ethical, declarations. We did not want ours to be thou shall not. And they all also had ways of establishing the agreements. And most of those were legal and involved a lot of lawyering, and we did not want to know what the liabilities were and prevent those. We wanted to know what the potential was and how to create the platform for going for that. And so setting the foundation had to do with ethics and professional standards and establishing how to go about establishing agreements. We wanted to co-create the agreements, which we could not find lawyers to do, by the way, in the beginning, because they always have to have an adversary and a winner, you know, in their legal agreements and convince each other to sign them. So that was the first, setting the foundation. The second category was co-creating not just the agreement, but the relationship. And that had to do with how to establish, go about establishing trust and intimacy with the client and a sense that things could be kept confidential. The next was a little mysterious, and this is still being evolved in my industry and still being trained and still being taught from the ground up. And in co-creating the relationship, which is the second category, we also had to include coaching presence. Now, you don't know what presence is by definition exactly. You feel it and you observe it and you recognize it when it is present in the room. This is the reason all the conversations stop when a specific person, and it may be a very quiet person, but when that person speaks up, the room stops and listens. What is that? How is it that that happens? And how do we know in a very short time who in the room or who in the meeting actually is going to be the one that people will ultimately be listening for and listening to? That has to do with co-creating relationships, and one of the foundations of relationship is presence. The third category is communicating effectively, and that involves active listening, which most of us are very familiar with, but what we weren't familiar with was what's not spoken, but we hear. And how do we know that? How do we know what somebody really intends when they're not actually being clear about it, or they may not even be aware of it sometime? So getting all those elephants in the room was going to be very, very important in our industry and in our individual work with clients and with companies. Also in communicating effectively, which is our third category, powerful questioning. What the heck did that mean? Mostly it means asking insightful questions that we really and truly don't know the answer to get independently, but that we find out and discover together with the client because we're willing to go on that adventure into the unknown with them, which most people want to be the expert. They want to know how to guide. They want to know what they're going to say next, which is the reason that listening becomes manipulative and not active and relational. Part of communicating effectively, active listening, powerful questioning, and the seventh competency, and this is how ours are done in terms of competency. So active listening is one competence, and one whole set of competencies. Powerful questioning is another, and our seventh in that category is direct communication. One of the reasons we like being with people is we know where we stand with them because they let us know. And direct communication, it does not mean painful or dictatorial or ordering about. It means what my direct experience is when I am with you or when I observe you. And that's one of our responsibilities as a business coach, that when no one else will tell them that they're the emperor with no clothes, we're the ones that have to come up with the creative and acceptable way to help of leadership, for example, know that they're not walking their talk. And we have to do that in a way that they actually are available to hear it. So it can't be punitive or blaming. Our fourth category is facilitating learning and results. And that has to do with creating awareness, designing actions, planning and goal setting, and then managing progress and accountability. So that's not all a mouthful. Why do we even bring this up right now? Because what we discovered is because we come into the industry to connect, communicate, and contribute, people who want to use our services want those very same things, but they express them in a different way. When they come into us, their three C's, that's, we have those three C's, they also have three C's, the letter C. They have either had something go awry in a commitment, a C that's a commitment, or they are running short of a commitment, or they are wanting to make a greater commitment very often to themselves in that case. And the second C that brings them in is confidence. They either have it and have lost it and know they have because of industry changes or company changes or personal family changes, or for some reason the confidence that they were experiencing either needs to increase and increase substantially in order for them to step up to a new opportunity. Their confidence level needs to accompany that, or they need to rebuild it, or sometimes they simply need to find it. And they are doing things well, but they don't know why, and they're starting to have to build their own case, and they're not being able to do that, or they're not being able to do that as well as they need to in new circumstances. Their third C, their first is commitment, and that can be something going awry with one or a new level of one being wanted. Something else is usually up with for some of them with their confidence quotient. Either it's gotten deflated, it's gotten wounded, they've had a betrayal, something has gone awry, or people have had new levels of confidence in them and want to give them a promotion, or they have new opportunities presenting and they want to be able to step up to them. The third C is competence, C-O-M-P-E-T-E-N-C-E. Now, that can either be meaning comfort with their level of competence or ability. And in that case, it might involve some more training. But something's going on with their sense of competence, their need for competence, or their reassurance about competence, or in some cases simply helping unfold and help them name and identify exactly what that is. The big S that they're frequently coming in for with us is for structure or system. Something either has changed substantially in their structure or their system, or the system that they have been depending on that they created that worked well for them has become either outdated or needs to go through a whole revolution. So what good does this do for us? Well, if we know we're coming in order to connect, communicate, and contribute, we can see in our industry which of our 11 core competencies actually help us make connection or be a connecting source or connect with another. Those competencies happen to fall in setting the foundation for us and in co-creating the relationship. Those happen to include our first four of 11 competencies. And I'll send you what the list of all of this is, because your industry has ethical and professional standards. Your industry, almost everybody's industry, establishes agreements of some kind, and we need to be doing that both knowledgeably and in a way that's collaborative if we want to create a business that we can build on and expand from and use as a springboard on our build our business once, you know, kind of journey. We all also have to find some way to develop trust and special kind of working relationship with the client. And we all don't know it, but we take our presence with us. And if it's flawed or damaged, we're the last to know very often instead of the first to know. But people who do business with us know for sure what they can come to us for in a trusting way and what they can't. So coaching presence or any kind of business presence, you know, has to do a lot with that. So I'll stop and take a breath and know that you probably have a few questions so far. But how you know why your people are showing up for you that are potential clients is really important to know in any industry that you're in.
You know, I think a lot of times because I am in an industry that is very much out there, you know, we're out there telling everybody who we are, showing who we are, that people who come to me are either referred to me from existing clients or fellow peers, or they've attended, you know, some event that I spoke at, or they've, you know, listened to my podcast or watched something or have been following me, because typically what happens is because in my case, I am so out there. By the time people come to me, it isn't a matter of who I am. They know most of that without having worked with me. And then, of course, we get to know one another better on the one-on-one and working on a project or their business. But that's been a really nice thing for me because I'm not having to spend a lot of time kissing frogs, if that makes sense. I can actually make a decision on who each project's Prince Charming is and move forward in that way. And it takes a lot of that anxiety and strain of like, who are the best folks that I should be working with and who kind of gels and fits with me, because folks typically will pre-qualify themselves by the time they've made their way to me.
Yes, I think that's really, really true. I don't know about your industry, but in my industry, the presenting situation almost never is what we actually end up working the most on, because very often, kind of like with psychology and mental health, in my industry, they very frequently come on board originally with the intention of changing someone else or something external to them. With most of our work is going to be on them beginning to kind of tell the truth and take complete responsibility for how it is they're being in that situation and why that is kind of creating for them a need to have outside, you know, help and support with that and converting that. So in your industry, how often do you actually end up doing what it is they come in and say they want to do in the very beginning? And how long does it take for you and the company or you and the individual client to get to ground on what it is you actually do start doing together?
So it starts with that discoverability meeting and me listening to them tell me what they think they need. And a lot of times they think they need to be in a lot of places and need to be doing a lot of things that maybe they should be doing over time, but not from the get-go. From the get-go, we've got to lay the foundation. So a lot of that discoverability meeting is me hearing everything that they think they need, me through my years of experience knowing really where they should start, and me getting them to understand why developing this project in phases and or where an area is not for them and why it's not for them, and here's an area that potentially they hadn't considered that actually would be a sweet spot for them if they're interested. And so that part typically takes, I guess, maybe about a month or so going back and forth to make that decision. And then it's time to sign on the dotted line and make, you know, come to an agreement with terms and with finances. And then it's dive in, let's go, you know, here's phase one, here's phase two, here's phase three. And I think by being real, taking the time to really identify that from the beginning, it gives them a really good understanding of what's going to be coming, and they don't feel like they have to be rushed. And in my business, I think people always feel, or businesses always feel, like they are behind the eight ball and they've got to do all these things. And while yes, that's true, there we can actually pause and take the time to develop the time, you know, take the time to develop the team and the tools so that they can carry on. And there are projects that are time sensitive where someone comes to me and says, we have an event next month or we have an event in 2 months. Can we do all these things? And it's like, okay, here's realistically what we can get done in a good way. Here's what we can hope might happen. Here's stuff there's no way we'd have time for that. So a lot of it is just giving that they're what they are expecting they're going to get and giving them the reality check and then just, you know, agreeing to move forward with what's really plausible.
Yeah, so you do a lot of pre-education in your process, but I also hear a great deal of contribution that you make in terms of structure and system and wanting to very thoughtfully join them where they actually are or can be rather than what they're wanting, where they're wanting to be. And naming all of that stuff is incredibly helpful, so I'm really glad to know about that. Well, coming up, we're probably going to need a little bit more time next time, which is going to be our show 29. And that, I'm thinking, could be mapping our own high road along with self-renewing stops along the way. How do we keep ourselves evolving with our business and also pivoting when need be and having respite, you know, and self-renewing and self-recharging opportunities along the way? And that's going to take us back to tribe. We've had that tribe conversation. I'll also reference a little bit life stages being in sync with the stage of your business. And like you've referenced a number of times, and I have too, trend watching, trend sensing, and technology exploring in order to keep us up. And one of the most important things I think I've done that I have not referenced but is really key to building a business once is creating intelligent creation of collaborations and alliances that are also timely. How do people go about doing that successfully? And I know you've done that well and had a real success with that, and it's been a key part of my business. So I want to not fail to mention a little bit about that and bring some key operational principles together for how I've gone about that, and ask you to be thinking about that between now and our next encounter.
Fantastic. Another great show, Sherry. I cannot wait for tomorrow. Hey, folks, if you want to get more goodness from Sherry, you should definitely go check her out at sherrylowry.com.
Set a reminder for 9:30 a.m. Central every day in the month of November to listen to daily episodes of the Build Your Business Once show.